Welcome back, everybody, to another episode of The Success Bug. For those of you who don't know, my name is Jay Washington. Every other Friday, I interview another young, successful, relatable entrepreneur. They share their stories with me, in turn, share their stories with you, the audience, and we all learn together, inspiring you all to escape the 9-to-5 one episode at a time. Another super exciting guest today, I had the chance to sit down with Sari Ibrahim. He is the founder of Financial Asset Protection, which consults with clients to explain and deliver financial options, including insurance and health policies, evaluating financial goals, and offering solutions to meet those goals. You'll learn all about how Sari initially had a full-time job and worked his way into starting his side hustle, which was Financial Asset Protection, and making it his main gig. So without further ado, please enjoy Sari Ibrahim. Yeah, man. I mean, the first thing that interested me in you is that it seemed like you had a professional background before you got into what you're doing now.
So I got a lot of my information from my desires to be an entrepreneur a lot from reading books. Probably read about, I don't know, maybe like 300 books.
300
in the last,
books.
Yeah, in the last, like, I don't know, 10 years. That's tough a lot. Oh, yeah. Mindset by Carol Dweck.
That's got to be like a top five. I mean, 300.
Yeah, yeah, for sure. Mindset, Think and Grow Rich by Napoleon Hill.
I actually just picked that up last week.
Oh, nice. Okay. Oh, for sure. Rich Dad, Poor Dad.
Yeah, that's a popular one.
Yeah. Never Split the Difference by Chris Voss. Yeah. Becoming Your Own Banker by Nelson Nash, which is like what I do right now.
Okay. So it seems like most of them... I mean, not most of them, but the majority of them kind of have to do with financial freedom and things of that nature. Did that always kind of pique your interest from a younger age? Like, it was the financial freedom aspect of it, like becoming your own boss type of thing?
Yeah, exactly. So I've always, so one time I remember when I graduated with my bachelor's degree, so fresh out of college, and I was talking to one of my friends and he was like, so where do you want to work now? And I was like, I have no idea. I was like, I don't want to work Monday through Friday straight, like 5 days a week. But at the same time, I don't want to work on the weekends. And sometimes I want to just be off on like a Tuesday morning. And he's like, yeah, that doesn't exist. But then, yeah, entrepreneurship, you have your own time. But I think it's far more important than just the time freedom. Like that is a component of entrepreneurship. Right. But if you base it off of that, just the ability to have your own time, I think that could be problematic, right? Like if you have too much time, and that's why a lot of entrepreneurs don't make it as entrepreneurs. Most of them don't, is because they have too much free time. And think about it, you're your own boss. A lot of sudden variables could change your entire day. Like if it's really nice out, if somebody wants to hang out in the middle of the day, if you want to go on vacation, like there's nobody stopping you. There are no obstacles. And that could be a bad thing in the beginning, because you need accountability a lot more in entrepreneurship than you do in working as a W-2 employee for a company. You need to have, this is why people have like mentors and coaches. Right. So like I'm an advocate of that. Like I think that every entrepreneur, especially new entrepreneurs, should have a mentor or a coach that's heavily involved in their business, as if they were kind of like their boss. You're still your own boss, but they're holding you accountable to things. That's for sure needed.
Right. So that makes sense. And you started in insurance and in the Medicare space. Mm-hmm. Did that have to do with any of kind of the self-teaching that you did at a younger age? Did that draw you to it? Or was it really just kind of an honest, like, this is a job, this is what's going to work right now, and then we'll see where it takes us?
Yeah, in the beginning, it was like that. In the beginning, it was just trying new things out. You know, I wanted to be a project manager. Right. I got a job at an insurance company, you know, and then I started to see kind of the entrepreneurial side of it, the self-employed side of it. I was like, you know, this could be a good future. This could lead to a lot of things. And I was attracted to the way that insurance companies think, the way they thought, very similar to like how banks think as far as risk management, but they're always looking for new opportunities. That kind of, I started to like blend that into my personality, where I would think now, like thinking like, you know, I have a show called Thinking Like a Bank, you know?
Right.
So like, yeah, that's why I named the show that, and the material we cover is like how to like take opportunities, but how to mitigate risk at the same time. That's what really like kind of drew me into the industry, was the way that the insurance companies think.
Right. So did you have a desire to stay in that, or was kind of to stay in that field of insurance and Medicare, mm-hmm. or was the plan always to eventually kind of pivot over to becoming an entrepreneur at some point?
Yeah, yeah. Well, so luckily it was both. So I did want to stay in the industry, and I wanted to be an entrepreneur. And so
you kind of had the best of both worlds for a while.
Exactly. Yeah. And that's the good thing too, is I don't think I don't want to make this a generalization, but not every career or industry is self-employable. You know what I mean? So it depends. Like if you come from a big company background, you're a network architect or something like that, it's going to be hard to kind of do self-employed, because if all the business you've done has been for Fortune 1000 companies, Fortune 500 companies, and that could be fine. Nothing against that. But insurance is a self-employable industry to be in. That's what drew me into it.
Right. So you kind of were given that opportunity to be your own self-starter and kind of make business for yourself. So you were kind of used to having that feeling of, if I don't make this sale, then I'm, not going to get paid the way I want to get paid.
Oh yeah. Yeah, definitely. Yeah. That's a whole separate conversation. but you're right. Yeah, definitely. The whole commission mindset, it was, for the first few years, it was scary,
Yeah, of course. Like no stability, right?
No stability. And I think the way to get around that is you need to have a solid marketing process. Marketing is the backbone of sales. So it goes usually marketing, then sales. You need to have a solid marketing foundation, solid marketing experience in order to stay in that momentum. For example, let's say I'm talking to a client, right? And the only way I can get paid is if I help execute with this client. If this client doesn't go through, that's no problem, because I have five other people on the calendar right behind him. You know what I mean? Right. So that's what you want. You want that support. Pipeline. You want that. Yeah, exactly. Pipeline. You want that pipeline. And you can never rely on one person ever, So you want, for every one sale you think you're going to get, you want four or five as backup. And then when you think that way, you will get that 20, 25% closing ratio. For sure. You'll get it. If you know what you're doing, you're in the right industry at the right time, you'll get that 20 to 25% closing ratio. Again, I'm generalizing right now,
but that's kind of what worked for you, but it's probably accurate for a lot of people too, though, right?
Yeah. Yeah, definitely.
So did you struggle with that in the beginning, or was it something that you kind of caught on to very early on?
Yeah, I did. I struggled with it in the beginning. I struggled with it as far as getting the new clients. So I was closing deals, but then as far as getting new ones, and then there were some delays now in getting paid. So now I had to think like, all right, so how do I pay all my bills without income? And there's ways to do that, right? So you could use savings to do that. You could borrow. If you're going to borrow, I recommend you borrow at zero to low interest loans that are spread out and flexible. I could try to raise capital from outside investors. The third one was a little bit out of reach, because typically investors they're going to invest in people who have experience, usually, for the most part. They do invest in startups, but again, they're looking for solid stability as far as business planning goes. And that was kind of out of my reach, but I was like, wait a minute, what if it's not number one or number two or number three? What if it's like one could lead to two and two could lead to three? And then that started to kind of create like an abundant mindset where it's like, how do I shift gears from one place to another place, but carry that momentum on to the next gear,
Right. So it's kind of, you were growing within the company and kind of growing in terms of being able to understand the marketing aspect and the sales aspect of it better. And from what I understand about you is that when you last worked there, you would kind of on the side do some financial planning and consulting for other people as you started to kind of get your feet underneath you.
Oh yeah, definitely. Yeah. I've been starting my business for almost 6 years.
They gelled, right?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So I was doing kind of both at the same time. I had my business, I was doing side W-2 consulting positions. Right. To keep the business afloat, to keep things moving. And then that they eventually blended together. Now I'm full-time self-employed financial planner. Now I still have a Medicare book of business, but it's mostly towards financial planning. And then, yeah, you're right. They blended together. They supported each other. And I want to kind of figure out a way where it's like, how do I take my W-2 income and then put that somewhere that will grow exponentially? And instead of just making money and then just spending money, how do I take that money and move it somewhere that I could take it with me into the future and grow it? Yeah.
Right. So I have a question about that. So what are your thoughts on, because you have you basically are saying what is probably the problem for a lot of people is that they kind of have money and they put it into their savings. And obviously this is a little off the rails of your story here, but something that I'm sure a lot of people would be curious about. In your perspective, it's like, what is the point of savings? Like, I think a lot of people kind of put their money into savings and mm-hmm. don't really even know why they're doing it. Like, they're just kind of like, they're told that they need to save.
I think to answer that, it's a quote that I heard. I don't know where I heard this quote, but it's, if you don't have a plan for your money, somebody else will. And what I think what that means is, like, you need to, if you're going to save intentionally. And I agree. I've heard a lot of mixed thought. I hear, you know, on a daily basis, like, should I save money for the future, or should I invest it, or should I, you know, spend it? And there's really no answer for one person. I think to better answer that, to identify your objectives, like, what is it that you want out of life? What's a 1-year goal, 5-year, 10-year, 20-year, you know, 30-year goal for you? Outline them and then identify, like, why those are important or what's important about them to you. And then make it as unique as possible. Like, think about your life, your history, the way you perceive the world to be, and then address that, and then address your goals, your financial goals, to your specific objectives. Now, this is important because you never want to fit into this, like, the should category, where, like, you know, a belief system or a paradigm, like, all right, you should graduate college at age 22. You should get a job by age 30. You should buy a house by age 33. You should, you know, yeah, and a lot of people think this way, you know, they think, like, they're put into lanes and they need to be in those lanes. And then there's, like, a report card throughout life. And I think that could be very problematic because.
Yeah, exactly. I think that's kind of what I was getting at too. It's like, there are expectations around what you should be doing. And if you're not doing that, it's almost looked at as wrong or incorrect, right?
Exactly. Yeah. And it's, you know, it's dangerous to fall into that mindset. It's a lot of people do. I fell into that mindset. There were times where I was like, you know, 3 months have gone by and I didn't make barely anything, you know, and I have a master's degree, you know, I should be making $150,000 a year based off of my average, you know, position or whatever it is.
Right.
And I was placing myself into categories. And again, you never want to do that. You never want to compare yourself to other people, other positions, other places, because when you do that, it takes you away from your original goal. It's like somebody pulling you away distracting. You're actually distracting yourself when you do that.
Right. No, that makes a ton of sense, man. Thank you for clearing that up. Honestly, I think, because it is something I do think a lot of people probably, you know, do struggle with. And I think it's something that you probably got a handle on pretty early on in the process, just because that's kind of like what you were surrounded by. On another note, though, when you were working and kind of gelling these two mm-hmm. responsibilities together, obviously you had a full-time job and also your side hustle, we'll call it for now, mm-hmm. which is your main hustle now, but it had to have been a little tough. I know you mentioned you had to have a lawyer to make sure, you know, you were doing things correctly and not, you know, you had all of your I's dotted and your T's crossed to make sure that you weren't doing anything wrong while you were pursuing this, right?
Yeah, absolutely. I wanted to make sure I was being ethical, you know, that I wasn't, because a lot of companies don't want that. A lot of companies don't want their employees to start businesses on the side, because they can obviously take their clients, their resources, their employees, things like that. I had no intention of doing that.
Yeah.
There were two different industries. One was healthcare/Medicare. The other one was financial planning.
And sorry, not to cut you off, but what are your thoughts on that? That the idea that you're not able to, or it's frowned upon, to start a business while you're working for a company?
Yeah, I think a lot of times companies are, you know, like, think about it this way. Like, you know, if you owned a company, you were investing money, it takes, like, I don't know what the stats are, but usually it takes like a year for a company to actually become profitable from an employee. So if you're working at a company for, you know, 3 or 4 years, the first year was pretty much a loss for the company, and they're paying for your benefits, you know, so they deserve to recoup the rewards from, you know, employing you. You know, they put up the reward, they put up all the risk and everything. So I think that if you are going to do something on the side, that it's ethical, it's legal, it's moral, and the company's not going to be harmed from you doing that. Having said that, I think there's another side to that coin, and that is that even if you're in your lane, a lot of companies still don't like it, maybe out of an ego thing, where it's like, we're doing all this work, even though this guy is meeting all, this employee is meeting all of the goals, everything. The fact that he or she is using their income, their money, to place it somewhere else in another business, that could also draw a lot of issues. And again, It depends. It depends on the industry, company, you know, the size of it too matters. I think the smaller, the worse. If you're working for a small business and you're starting a small business on the side, that could bump heads, especially if the owner is heavily involved in the business.
Right.
You know, like when I was working at the at a couple companies, actually, they were a little bit, I wasn't working in a cubicle 9 to 5. So then, right. So I had flexibility to move around. I could, you know, I had sometimes a gap. Like, for example, like, if I had to do administrative work that was going to take me 3 hours to do, what I would do is I would do my other financial planning stuff in the middle of the day, talking to people. And then I would go to like a 24-hour Starbucks, which there are in Chicago. There's a couple of 24-hour Starbucks.
Interesting.
I would go there from like 11 p.m. until like 2 a.m. to do that work. So I worked hard, but at the same time, efficient to get multiple things done, you know, at the same time.
Right. No, that makes sense. So you were afforded an opportunity that most people probably do have, but are probably unaware that they have, right? Where it's like they think that it might not really be possible to pursue something else while they actually have a job, which in reality, like you and I talked about, is probably one of the most advantageous positions you could be in, right?
Yeah, you're right, Jeremiah. Yeah, a lot of people have positions where they're like, for example, they have flexibility throughout the day. A lot of people are not tied down 9 to 5. They have to be sitting in the same spot. You know, they could work from home sometimes. They could go to the office sometimes. They could do half and half. They could take a day off as long as they're, you know, they might have like a bi-weekly meeting that they have to attend to. And then everything in between there could just be, you know, as long as they're getting their things done. One thing I was doing a lot from reading all the books and everything, because I always wondered, you know, like I always wondered how does somebody own, you know, 500 real estate properties, or how does somebody, you know, run a hospital, things like that, you know, and it comes from tools and techniques. It doesn't come from everything being contained into their mind. I think that people would go crazy if they were that way. But then again, it draws a question. It asks the question again, is how do you do it without containing everything in your brain? And the way you do that is through tools and techniques and experience and leverage, and you use different ways. Like, for example, I always use checklists. I have everything in a calendar. I only do tasks that are in a calendar that are time blocked. I have, you know, I use project management software. So there's different tools and different things like that people could use that can make them more efficient. So that way you're not just adding, when you add on something else in your plate, you're not just adding on hours, meaning that you don't go from 40 hours to 80 hours. That's not what I'm talking about. I'm saying you go from 40 hours and repositioning. Maybe those hours need to be repositioned in a way where you could free up 5 or 10 more hours. So that way you're doing what you were doing in 40 hours, you're doing it in 30. And now you have 10 extra hours to do your side business or whatever it is that you want to do in life.
Right. And there's also the financial aspect of it too, right? Where it's like you said before, that some companies might take the wrong way, but it's really your money at a certain point that you're given to do a job, and whatever you do outside of those hours with that money, you know, it's that literally can help you fund whatever you're pursuing too, right?
Yeah, exactly. And I wanted that. I didn't want the money sitting in a bank account, not doing anything. I didn't want to spend it on like nonsense.
Yeah.
I wanted to invest it in a business and then keep, you know, pouring, keep planting the seeds there, because I wasn't going to see any return. You know, I assumed I wasn't going to see any returns at all for a while, you know, but as long as I could plant the seeds, get that growing, by the time that grows a little bit, then it'll be time to pivot into self-employment. Right. Another thing too, is I was like, you know, a lot of the jobs I had, I think for the most part, you know, very replaceable, you know what I mean? So like I was in executive sales positions. Usually a lot of it's very common to, you know, get laid off. So I didn't want to get put in a position where I was like, all right, you know, I'm putting in my whole heart to the company, and the next thing you know, boom, I get laid off. I didn't want that to happen.
Yeah.
So without a business on the side, I wanted to invest the money, and I knew that it would pay off in the future. I knew that, you know, by the time I'm 45, 50 years old, I would be so thankful I did everything. That's what I was looking at. That's what I was planning on doing. I didn't care about the small things in the middle, in the meantime. And again, I never wanted to rely, because a lot of people would say like, you know, I don't need to be self-employed right now. I have, you know, I'm working for a company. They're really good. And you know, and that's one side of it too. But at the same time, you never know what's going to happen. You never know. You always want to rely on yourself. You want to, you know, bank on yourself. You know, you want to those situations already taken care of in case something like that happens.
Right. And they can let you go for whatever reason too, not even necessarily to be laid off. Like a lot of these contracts are at will, where it's like, you can be, you know, let go for any reason or no reason at any time. So I think it makes sense that you went and pursued that. Mm-hmm. At what point did it become possible for you to look at the business and be like, oh, wow, like I can actually consider leaving my job for this?
It got to that point when I had some passive income coming in.
Okay.
And when I landed like three clients, and one of them, one of the clients was a really big client with a lot of connections. So I knew once I had those connections already locked down, that was enough now to pivot now. And at the same time, and then another side to it too, was that I knew what it could lead to now. For example, while I was working, you know, while I was doing my actual job, I was like, if I was doing this other thing, I could probably do more of it there that would pay off later on in the future. So I started thinking like that, where it was like, for example, being on guest appearances. So this is one way, talking to you right now, this is one way I spread the message about my business and what I do and how I help people with financial planning. And it started to work. I started to see a little like fire. It started to work where it was like, I would email, I don't know what it was, 50 people or 12, and then they would get back to me to have them on their show, like podcast hosts. And then I was like, you know what, this could be a system now. So I hired somebody, and then she would go on different podcast databases and then email hosts.
Right.
And then that would schedule me. And then all of a sudden now I was like getting like, you know, two or three shows a day while I was working at this company. And I was, all right, you know what? If I wasn't working at this company, I could probably do five or six in a day. And then that would double or triple at the end of the day, maybe in a long-term spread, that would double or triple, you know, potential for other areas in this business.
Right.
So that was another factor too to consider.
Right. So a lot of it too is kind of like the time that you were then allowed to use for other things that wasn't going towards your job, right?
Yeah, exactly.
So for you, was that a tough transition? Like, was it tough to communicate that? Or were you just ready to kind of pack up and get it moving on to financial asset protection?
Yeah. So I was ready from every job. My first job that I had out of college, I was ready to be self-employed at that time.
As soon as you started, you were done.
Exactly. Because I only had a few encounters with a couple entrepreneurs, and that really like left a mark in my life. You know, I wanted to be like that. I wanted to be very successful, very wealthy, independent. So every job I had, I always watched the CEO or the CFO or, you know, the owner of the company or the executives. I always had my eyes on them because I knew I wanted to be like that when I grew up, you know, and I wanted to own the company. And, you know, at some companies, again, they don't like that. You know, they don't want employees to think too big because they don't want competition. A lot of upper management doesn't want anybody to replace them. So to answer your question, I always had like, you know, I always wanted to be an entrepreneur, even from my first job.
Okay. So was that something that you think you got from kind of all the books that you read? Because 300 in like 6 years is a lot. Like, it's really a lot. That's probably like, I'm terrible at math, so someone could probably correct me here. That's like at least like 50 books a year in that span, right?
Something like that. Yeah.
No, and maybe less. See, this one's not bad at math.
Yeah, it was more like 310 years. So about 30 per year. So about two something per month. And what I'll do is I'll read two books at the same time. So I'll read, for example, one book, I'll read 20 pages of it every day. And then like in the morning, and then at night, read 20 pages of another book at night. And then I would just put a bookmark and then just, you know, just every 20, and then
just chip away at it.
Yeah, exactly. Chip away at it. And that's my philosophy for life, is chip away at it. You know, I just kind of spread it out on a long thing, and there's no rush, and you can get way more done that way. Same thing with the business thing, like starting it was like just chipping it away, you know, like one task at a time. And then all of a sudden you have like, you know, this mountain in front of you that you've built, but it obviously wasn't overnight. It was piece by piece, which is far more important in my opinion than huge moves, because those small chips are also habits.
Right. And they kind of put you into that position to be able to handle those things when you're actually where you want to be. Right. Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, exactly.
So, going back to my original question, because we kind of tailed off on the books there, was that part, or no, were the books partly kind of like what allowed you to, you know, have that mindset or was it something you think you always have and the books just kind of supplemented that?
Yeah, I think so. I've always wanted to be financially free. I've always wanted to be wealthy, and I would read books to get there. So I already had the objective and the intention in mind. And then the books, like you said, supplemented that and they added on to that.
Right.
And it helped a lot because I was getting to know these authors, getting to know how they were thinking about different things. And it was almost like every book I was reading, I was probably, I don't know, retaining maybe 10%, if that, from it. But it was like 10% from all these books. And then it got to the point where I would forget what the book was about. I would forget who wrote it, who said it, yeah. But I would remember the key detail in there.
Which is no offense to the writer, but which is the most important, the most important part, right? Actually remembering the details about who wrote it.
Yeah, exactly.
So, okay. So you were ready to go. Like you were ready to move on to being an entrepreneur anyway. And also you had read like a shit ton of books along the way. So were there any actual obstacles you faced when you first decided to finally pursue financial asset protection full time?
Yeah, definitely. There was a lot of obstacles. So a lot of cases, for example, when I'm dealing with clients, a lot of cases didn't get accepted. So the clients wanted to do it, the insurance companies didn't want to do it. That was an obstacle that I wasn't on my part. And I started to come across a lot of things, you know, like, I can't even think of them right now, but yeah, there was, to answer your question, there were a lot of obstacles. It wasn't anywhere near where I thought it was going to go.
Right.
Or at least, how easy I thought it was. It was much difficult than I actually thought it was, but it led me to this other theory or this other way of thinking. And that is that in business, you have things that you can control and things you cannot control. For example, things you can control are showing up to meetings, scheduling, sending out emails, doing the research, finding the clients, you know, whatever it is you're doing, things that you can control. And then things you can't control are like somebody showing up to the meeting. You can't really control that. Somebody saying yes to your solution. You can't really control what's going to happen in their minds. The stock market crashing, you know, unemployment going up. COVID, all these other things, these are things you cannot control. So what you want to do is you want to focus more on what you can control and then put everything else and just leave that up to what you can control. Meaning that if a client says, no, I don't want to do this. Well, you've already controlled the variables of leading to more clients. So you already have more clients behind him or her, you know, or COVID happens. Well, you're already working on, you know, such and such. So you have the ability not to pivot into a different direction. So when you differentiate those two things, you become stronger as a person and you become more intellectual. You know how to pivot more. You're not relying on the world. You're not relying on luck. There's no luck at all involved in true entrepreneurship or gambling. You're focusing on what you know and what you can control and what you can carry out.
Right. And that makes sense. It applies a lot to, you know, what exactly you're kind of doing, and what you've done in the past, which is sales and marketing, which is a field where you kind of need that mentality to actually be successful, right? Because there are a lot of no's, plenty of no's, and a lot of failures along the way.
Oh, yeah, definitely. Yeah. So many people are afraid of sales because, to back up a little bit. So My opinion of sales is just helping people see your vision. That's what sales is, plain and simple. It's influencing people, helping people see your vision, creating win-win situations. It's not necessarily selling objects and material and getting money in exchange for that. So I think that that helped me a lot by understanding that definition and understanding that way of thinking. Now it's negotiating. It's creating win-win situations. That plus, you will get the no. So I think a lot of people are afraid, like, what if somebody says no to me and then I don't get a sale? Well, that will happen. That keeps happening, even to the best salespeople and companies. That happens all the time. That's actually a good sign. That means you're trying to pursue people when you're getting no's. But at the same time, you will have a few of those yeses that will create an entire career for you, you know, and that's what you should focus on.
Right. So we didn't even really... We've talked a lot about, financial asset protection. We've mentioned it along the way, but can you explain a little bit about what it is so people listening can actually have an idea of what exactly it is that you now do that you've left, obviously, your full-time job to do, and made this your full-time job?
Yeah, definitely. Yeah. So it's called Financial Asset Protection. It's a financial services firm. We were located in Chicago and we help and service clients in all 50 states. What we do is we help clients build predictable wealth safely without having to worry about the stock market, without having to worry about who's in office, without having to worry about taxes. We help them do it more from like a holistic standpoint and from a guaranteed standpoint too. So it's not an investment. It's a saving strategy, a guaranteed saving strategy. It's based off of the bank on yourself concept, also known as the infinite banking concept. I'm a bank on yourself professional. So that's kind of the niche. We've niched down to business owners, even aspiring business owners, new business owners, startups. That's who we've niched down to and focus on. And we help them, find liquidity in for their business, help them save for the future, help them plan for retirement, help them become their own source of financing. So that's kind of what we niche down to. And that's what the company does.
Right. So is there a personal connection to you wanting to do this side of it? Like, is there something that drew you to this in the first place? Or was this something that you just kind of saw an opportunity with and pursued it?
Yeah. So I wanted to get into, obviously, insurance side.
You had experience with it, right?
Yeah, exactly. Insurance side. And then also I added on the financial planning side too. A lot of it goes kind of hand in hand in the industry. Typically, insurance falls under financial services. So I kind of use those interchangeably, insurance and financial services. But at the same time, there were things I enjoyed. I liked it a lot. I love talking about money and business and taxes and all these different creative things. Even like watching movies. I love movies where they're like talked about like business and things like that. Like for example, The Shawshank Redemption. The part where one of the guards was talking about how he inherited like $60,000, but he was mad that he had to pay taxes on it. And then the guy, I forgot his name, the main character was like, "Oh yeah, do you trust your wife? If you do, you can gift to her." That, like, stuff like that, not that actual thing that he was citing, but stuff like that was really appealing to me. Like, figure out ways to like survive financially just based off of your mindset, what you know. That was really intriguing. But then when I got into the industry, there were a lot of things I didn't like about it. Like, for example, I didn't like the idea of convincing people to invest in the stock market. That's typically what
most people are kind of uncomfortable with that at first, right?
Yeah. They're typically uncomfortable with that investing. And then also too, is like, if something goes wrong, again, back to the things we can't control, the stock market. So when things go bad, it's like, you're going to be first to blame.
Yeah. And even though it's technically out of both of your control.
Exactly. And I didn't want that. I wanted to be more on the control side. I wanted, my goal is that, and this has happened in the beginning of COVID, where like, clients like call me like, "Hey, what happened to all our money? Is our money safe? There's a market crash." And, yes, it is. It's 100% safe. It was the same as it was yesterday. That's my goal. Like, my goal is for another 2008 to happen. Hopefully not as bad, but I think just mathematically speaking, it's going to happen again. Another crash is going to happen. Mm-hmm. And my goal is for my clients to be like, "Hey, what happened to my money?" And me be like, "It's fine. Nothing happened to it. It's not impacted by market conditions."
Right. So the whole idea is that the investments will be so stable that it's not, obviously nothing's guaranteed, but there's a very high chance that most of the things that you'll have them investing in will be stable and continue to grow, even through things like, obviously, an inevitable market crash at some point.
Exactly. Yeah. If you were to measure risk, like, for example, like 1 to 99, 1 being cash in a checking account or savings account, and then 99 being individual stocks of a tech company, most risk and then lowest risk. The solutions I help clients with are at 1. That's the risk category they're at.
Right. Yeah. I mean, that makes sense. I mean, was that the hardest aspect of it, was kind of, taking that leap with people and, having them kind of be okay with, investing in something or not investing in something, but, choosing to involve themselves with something that they were kind of unsure about? Cause at the same time, like we talked about, the stock market is a little uncertain, but at the same time, people know about it. Like, they know what it is and they know it's there and they know people make money from it. For this is a startup. It's almost, for them in their head, it's a little riskier, even though at the end of the day, the product is supposed to be safer.
Yeah. And that's actually an interesting point you mentioned, because, like, for example, Mark Twain said, and I'm probably going to butcher the quote. He said it's not what you know. Sorry. It's not what you don't know that'll hurt you. It's what you do know that just ain't so, that will hurt you. So in other words, that this is where the stock market comes in. It's because people think they understand the stock market, they're familiar with it, that they'll pursue on in it because they're familiar with it, but it doesn't mean that they know how it works. You know what I mean? And that's kind of the distinction where it happens, where it's like, And to add on to that quote, I think it's more dangerous to act upon something that you don't know that you think is true, because you're carrying out actions as a result of something that you don't know is true. Right. Versus when you don't know something you don't even know exists, therefore you're not even going to take any actions towards it because you don't even know about it, you know? And right. That's probably going to be safer for you.
But, it's kind of like blind confidence in its own way, right?
Exactly. Yes. Exactly. And I don't know, we got so far into philosophy right now.
Yeah. That I often end up here with people. It's all good.
I forgot where I was even going with this. Oh, so the solutions I help clients with, you know, they're not conventional solutions, you know, talking about bank on yourself or infinite banking. It's not something that everybody's heard of. And then we start getting into the details of it and how it works and putting it all together. People are kind of like, you know, well, why haven't I heard about this before? Why hasn't my financial advisor told me about
exactly,
it? Why
right.
You know, why hasn't my college professor talked about this? Why haven't my parents talked about this? You know, there's all these different paradigms that come in and questioning them. And it's about, I mentioned in the beginning of this episode that there's one book called Mindset by Carol Dweck. And she talks about differentiating growth mindset from a fixed mindset. And a growth mindset explores and adapts throughout life and adds on to things they don't know or they're not familiar with. They add on to it. They adapt. They learn from it, you know? Whereas fixed mindset is like, well, if it's not in the book, you know, there's no reason to talk about it. Or if it's not broken, why fix it? That's kind of the fixed mindset aspect of it. You know, obviously the books, you know, that helped a lot. So one book I recommend for the audience listening who are business owners who want to better understand this concept, because again, it's going to be too much to put into one episode. It's called Becoming Your Own Banker by Nelson Nash.
Right.
And I could actually, if you stick around to the end of the show, I'll send you a free copy of the book and I'll include a link at the end of the show for that.
Yes, absolutely. Yeah. We'll touch on that once we wrap up, but that would be incredible. And, you know, obviously it's been an interesting journey for you, and it's been a very unique one, because I think we talked about this a little bit when we first met up, but you know, the whole idea of starting your own business while having a job is something that we both think that people don't do enough of.
Yeah.
So when you look back on your entire journey, what would you say to somebody who might be in that exact position or something similar, where they might be a little afraid to take that leap? They have a job and they have some ideas and they might be a little afraid to pursue it, or they might just not think they can for whatever reason.
Yeah, I would say really take seriously what you want out of life, not necessarily what you need, but what you want out of life. Really drill in on that, focus on that. It's not selfish. You're actually going to be able to help more people when you think this way. And then pursue it, and don't really, as long as it's legal, ethical, moral, you know, don't really care about what happens next. Focus more on the process, you actually pursuing it and you doing it. And another thing too is, like, if you believe in like a higher power, if you believe in God, if you believe in, you know, the universe, you'll never be punished for wanting more out of life. You know what I mean? So a lot of people think that way. A lot of people think that if I leap too far and too fast, you know, I want to just create a $1 billion company. A lot of people think that, like, if I take that far leap and I fall, that fall is going to hurt a lot. You know what I mean? And I disagree with that. I don't think that's true. I don't think that the world is going to punish you for wanting more out of life.
Right. No, I think that was incredible advice. Honestly, it is true. It's something that people are kind of afraid to take the next step for, because they think that, you know, it's the natural thing to do is to not actually aim that high. But in reality, if more people, there's probably less competition than we might think there is, because so many people think that way.
I was watching one time, Jordan Belfort speak and a long time ago. And what he said was just so incredible. He was like, who in here, he was giving a speech to a whole bunch of like financial professionals. And he's like, who in here? I wish I was there. I wasn't there though. He's like, who in here wants to be wealthy? You want to be very wealthy in life. He's like, raise your hand. And then a whole bunch of people rose their hand, and he was like, okay, now, if you really want to be wealthy, raise your hand just a little bit higher. And then they did. And then he's like, all right, just a little bit higher. And then he's like, now as high as you possibly can. And a whole bunch of people rose their hand as high as they possibly can. And he's like, all right, now hold it there for a second. And he's like, why didn't you guys raise your hands this far up when I first asked you? In other words, your first instinct should be to go as high as you possibly can without creating some sort of like limit to
without someone needing to tell you to do it, right?
Yeah, exactly.
That's interesting. Wow. I mean, I wouldn't expect anything else from the wolf himself, but, but you know, sorry, it's been an awesome discussion, man. I mean, I definitely learned a ton. It's always interesting for me as somebody who does have a full-time job and also does this on the side to talk to somebody who's been there and done that. So I think, you know, a lot of people will get a lot out of this, and, you know, just, I know the financial asset protection is going to continue to do awesome things, and, you know, can't wait to see all the awesome things that you continue to do.
Yeah, Jeremiah, thank you so much for having me on. I mean, I appreciate our conversation. I look forward to talking to you again.
Yeah, absolutely, man. And that will do it, everybody. Big thanks to Sari Ibrahim for coming onto the show. I think that is the first time that we've had on the show somebody who actually started a side hustle while they had a main full-time job and made it into their full-time gig. So much to be learned from that. There's so many people who can do that same exact thing. Feel free to reach out to Sari on LinkedIn or go to financialassetprotection.com where you can find all of his resources and their services. But you know the deal. We'll see you all next week. Next Friday, we'll be breaking down the net worth of a famous entrepreneur or celebrity. The following week, we will have another interview with a young, successful, relatable entrepreneur. You're not going to want to miss it. Peace out.